So is everybody ready? Well, hold on a second. All right, so this is Dr. Barbara Campbell, Chair of Arizona State Board of Podiatry Examiners. This is December 8th, meeting 2021. So we'll call the meeting over at 8:32 a.m. We've basically already done our roll call as we were checking as people were dialing in. So I do make my statement regarding that this is a professional administrative meeting. All board members will conduct themselves in a professional manner. It's expected that all participants will conduct themselves in a professional manner. Combativeness, rudeness, verbal aggression is not tolerated, and if such behavior occurs, I reserve the right to limit who may address the board. The board always strives to conduct our meetings with the utmost respect for the process and for those who are in attendance. Does anyone at this time have any declaration or of a conflict of interest on any of the above agenda items, cases? Okay. Hearing none, we're going to go ahead and move on to item five, which is our items for board review. Thank you, Margaret. Discussion, excuse me, and possible action under A, investigation files. So we're going to go ahead and start with one. It's complaint number 21-11-C. Complaint number 3, 21-18-C is Dr. Suzanne Abraham, DPM. She is here present with her counsel, Ken Mosco, Esquire. And Dr. Farahani is our investigator on that case. So I will ask Dr. Farahani to come forward to the table and to present us with his investigation report.
Hello, everybody. My name is Dr. Farahani. I'm was investigator for complaint number 21-18-C. Licensee was Dr. Suzanne Abram. License number POD000609. I'm going to give a summary of allegations. Patient MB was seen on 4/22/2021 for his left foot plantar warts. MB stated that the doctor asked if she could send the tissue sample for pathology testing. Patient stated that he agreed as long as it covered by his insurance. MB states that the office did not discuss with him coverage issues with insurance carrier. MB states that he did not sign any consent and mentioned the need for pathology testing. He received an invoice from Sages Pathology on June 7th, 2021 for the amount of $140.70. He claims that he reached out to the office of Dr. Abrams without any response. He's concerned that the pathology testing was not warranted. He further discussed the lack of communication from the office and the staff. He further questions Dr. Abrams' decision-making leading to wasted resources on unnecessary tests. He states that he should not be responsible for the bill. The licensee's written response to allegation on behalf of her through her counsel. Dr. Abrams responded to the allegation on 10-6-2021, stating the facts below. MB presented to my office on April 2021 relevant award on his left foot. With MB's informed consent, I excised this wart. The procedure was successful and uneventful. MB complaint does not take issue with the procedure I perform or the outcome. His complaint is focused solely on the post-surgical biopsy on the excised wart. The specific issue MB raised are an alleged lack of consent for a biopsy, 2, an alleged lack of clinical indication for biopsy, and 3, laboratory cost of the biopsy. However, as explained in detail below, MB allegations were unwarranted. Dr. Abrams goes on by saying that MB signed the consent on 4/22/2021. The complaint clearly stated this operation is known as all in bold excision slash biopsy of verruca left plantar fourth metatarsal. MB did not refuse my sending the excised verruca to the lab. He consented to it verbally and in writing. She further explains no affiliation to or financial interest in the pathology lab to which she sent the excised tissue. She states sending the excised tissue to the lab is a standard of care to rule out potentially dangerous diagnoses that presented as a likely benign tissue. Labs are responsible with their own billing. When I received MB's complaint, which was the first time she had personally heard of such issue, she contacted the rep at the lab. The lab generously wrote off the balance for MB's out-of-pocket cost, and MB's current balance is at $0. When I reviewed the medical records, MB did sign a consent of 4/22/21. The complaint clearly states the operation is known. The consent clearly states the operation is known as all bolt excision slash biopsy of verruca left plantar fourth med head. I had an interview with the complainant. It seems like he was mostly concerned about the invoice that he had received, and the other concern that he was the lack of communication between the staff at Dr. Abrams' office and so forth and so on. My investigating conclusion, I found the allegation, and I found that there was no allegation that was unsubstantiated. I found it on these means that the patient clearly consented for the procedure and biopsy on 4/22/2021, and the doctor had no financial interest with the lab. Sending out tissue after excision of plantar warts is within the standard of care, and the lab is a separate entity, and the doctor nor its office is responsible for their billing habit or pattern. Communication, however, seems to have been an issue within the practice to timely notify the provider, in this case Dr. Abrams, with the patient's concern. I believe that if the complaint could have been prevented if the concern was appropriately communicated to Dr. Abrams to address the concern. And once the concern was brought up to the doctor and she was made aware of the problem, it was corrected, and currently no money is owed by the patient to the lab. So this is the end of my investigated report.
Thank you, Dr. Farahani. I heard, did a couple people come on to the call? Dr. Discount or Dr. Andrews? I heard some clicking in. Okay.
I think that was me. I got disconnected and re-signed back in.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Alrighty. And I was getting a little background noise, so I just remind everyone, if you're not speaking, to please mute your phones. Thanks. That helps a lot. Thank you very much, sir, Dr. Farahani. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Farahani at this time? Hearing none, and we do not have the complainant is not present. So at this time, I would ask if Dr. Abraham or her counsel would like to make a statement or comments.
I certainly don't have anything to add. Do you have anything to add, or I mean, if the board has questions for Dr. Abraham, obviously she'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
And at this time, do any of my board members have questions for Dr. Abraham?
No.
Thank you.
No questions for Dr. Abraham.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman and Dr. Ulano. I would most certainly agree with Dr. Farahani's investigation report, and zoning in, particularly on the issues of office communication, because that's a lot of the basis for a lot of complaints we see is lack of communication. And I think people also, patients and people need to be made aware that they make that contract with their insurance company. And it is their responsibility to know what their insurance company requirements are. There are so many insurance policies out there. We all know there is no way any doctor's office staff can know every single policy that's out there. So if anybody else has any comments or concerns, I will make a motion to dismiss case 21-18-C for no violation of state statutes.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So moved. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, all.
All right. Our next case that we will go to is Dr. Farahani's. The other case Dr. Farahani is here for is Dr. Jean Crone. Complaint number is 21-11-C. Dr. Crone is not going to be present on the call, neither will the complainants. So, Dr. Farahani, we're ready for your investigation report.
Okay, this is complaint number 21-11-C, licensee Dr. Jean Crone, DPM, POD 000604. BK is a 92-year-old vision-impaired patient seen with by Dr. Crone on May 3rd, 2021 at approximately 10:30 a.m. BK states that she has been seen the doctor twice now. The first time she was relieved to have someone care for her toenails and didn't ask questions nor was observant. BK claims the second visit was different. She states that the leather exam chair were not covered with paper as compared to other physicians' offices. No effort to sanitize prior to her sitting in the chair, but she states that it could have happened before she was guided to the room. She states that her bare feet rested on the foot of the table and state the following: clippers were took from the drawer. She then proceeded to trimming her toenail. After completion of the procedure, a power file was used to smooth the ends of the end of the nails. And then doctor tossed the clippers back into the same drawer. She heard several clicks. She saw no evidence of any sort of device to sanitize tools in the office during her visit. However, patient states that it could have been located elsewhere in the office or in another room. She questions the sterilization protocol for Dr. Crone's office and did not want to return for another visit. Dr. Crone responds to the allegation with a letter on 6/27/2021 and explains thoroughly as below. This is a response to complaint about possible lack of sanitation. We use Citrus 2 germicidal hospital sanitizing cleaner to clean office exam chair after each patient and before patient comes to the room. We do not clean in front of the patient, so that this is why patient did not see that. So I'm not sure what kind of effort of sanitation patient wanted to see, but if she had any questions about it, she should have asked, and I would have gladly showed her a bottle, as it is always present on the stand. We do not use paper to cover the exam chair. A patient may have seen in other offices, she also states that using a Citrus 2 hospital sanitizing and deodorizing cleaner after every patient is enough to kill everything, and the paper is really not needed. She states that she does have a paper towel for the footrest if needed to use it. Procedures were required blood or some contaminants. Another concern was about tool sanitation. I use a specialty podiatry toolbox filled with Vavicide-01 glutaraldehyde solution where I place all of my tools. This solution is changed every 30 days. This solution kills everything, including nail fungus, and it's okay to drop all instruments in one box, and it will sanitize all instruments, and there should be no cross-contamination. Patient was seen in my office twice, and same routine in sanitation was used. To my knowledge, patient did not develop or complain of any bacterial infection in her toes and feet after those visits. Again, if the patient had concerns about sanitation methods, she should have asked, and I would have explained and showed her sanitizing solution bottles that I have and I use in the office. I reviewed the medical records, and they were all consistent with nail debridement. I attempted to contact BK on two separate occasions. Both times, unfortunately, I got the voicemail. One was on October 18th, approximately 2:30 p.m., and one was October 25th, around 3 p.m. I spoke with Dr. Croyne via phone, discussed her sanitation protocol in detail. I found the allegations to be unsubstantiated. I found, because Dr. thoroughly describes sanitation protocol that appears to be universal within podiatry practices. There was no issue of infection of any sort that resulted in administering any type of oral antibiotics or hospitalization to question such sanitation protocol. And I also would like to add that after I had finished my report and I sent it to Heather, I received a voicemail on my cell approximately 3-4 days later from this patient, and she felt terrible that she made the complaint to the board, and she did not think that this complaint would be so drastic on a doctor's license. So I forwarded that voicemail to Heather to find out what it is, as I probably knew myself, but she advised that I should mention it to the board, but once you unfortunately file a complaint, you must go through the process. So anyways, I just wanted to let you know that the patient did leave a voicemail for me. If you guys have any questions, I'm here to answer.
Thank you, Dr. Farhani. Yes, Heather had apparently a fairly long telephone conversation with this complaint and explaining to her the process, and then we received an addendum yesterday the board members a letter from this same complainant addressed to me, and she kind of, I think, was still confused or didn't understand the process, and she was again wanting to withdraw her complaint and was actually kind of, I think, looking for somebody to blame. And we were the target. The board was the target. So if Heather wants to make any remarks, please do, regarding, you know, if we hit the salient points of this complaint, so with the complainant in general. So I have...
Madam...
Yes.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, board members. This is Heather Broadison. I would just reiterate in that when I spoke to the complainant on the phone, she did indicate that she did not intend to file a complaint and wanted to know how to withdraw it. And again, I just explained the process to her.
And I think I got two from that, the letter, as she was looking for a podiatrist. And I think, you know, the board is not in the position to refer patients or people to certain, you know, to podiatrists, that they just need to realize that and have it explained to them that, you know, they need to go to their insurance company and ask for a referral, or they may even get, you know, you can get referrals from, you know, hospitals and different facilities in your area. So does anyone have any other, Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilana, do you have any questions for Dr. Farhani?
No. So do we have to make a motion to dismiss this?
Yes, we do.
I'd like to make a motion to dismiss case 21-11-C for unsubstantiated claims.
Do we have a second?
I second the motion.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Milano. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So moved. Thanks, Dr. Farahani. All righty. Okay, let's move on then. Our next case is Dr. Mark Olson, which is 21-17-C, and Dr. Saunders is an investigator. Dr. Olson or the complainant, neither party are present on the call, so we'll just be hearing Dr. Saunders' report.
Sure. Okay, good morning, everybody. I will summarize this for you. The complainant KB was a previous patient of Dr. Olson's, and her main complaint is that she basically did not like the bedside manner of Dr. Olson on this visit. She describes a conflict that occurred during the visit in her complaint regarding a confrontation regarding her request for pain medications, and she did not like the way that Dr. Olson apparently approached that for her. She was originally seen in the emergency room for an injury that occurred to her toe that she got was told to go follow up with the podiatrist, and because she had seen Dr. Olson in the past, she followed up with him for a right fifth toe fracture. And subsequent care following the notes here, Dr. Olson saw the patient pretty urgently as a fit-in appointment. Notes describe that the patient did indeed have a fracture. Treatment was provided with a closed reduction. In the notes, it's pretty well documented that he discussed the problem, discussed the aftercare and strapping and a postoperative plan. I did not speak with the complainant. She seemed to make it very clear in her complaint that she did not like the bedside manner. There was some profanity used in the complaint, and I got a pretty good understanding of what the concern was. Following the notes of the Dr. Olson's visit, everything is pretty well documented. He did see the patient. It's described as to what the problem was and the plan of care and treatment. The area of concern was regarding some pain medication for which Dr. Olson did indeed actually make a prescription. I researched the database to see if that prescription was indeed filled, and it was, but there was no prior narcotics filled by other physicians that was noted as well. Reviewing the financials of the case, everything seemed to be billed appropriate. And then really just to summarize this, I think Dr. Olson's care was really above the standard. He had seen this patient before, was able to work them back in. He provided definitive treatment for the patient. And it just seems basically that the complainant KB just did not agree with the bedside manner enough to the point that she made this complaint. But I don't see any violation of care. I think everything was appropriate. And I can answer any questions that came up during this.
Thank you, Dr. Saunders. I certainly agree with your investigation report. And just to note, and as a reminder to the other board members, that Dr. Olson is currently under, has an order, a non-disciplinary CME order, which includes education on communication skills. So this is already being addressed. And I do agree that his care was at the standard of community. So does anyone have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No questions for Dr. Saunders. Thank you.
Thank you. Hearing none, I will make a motion to dismiss this case 21-17-C, saying no of state statute. Do I have a
second?
Thank you, Dr. Foreman, for the second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. So moved. All righty. Our next case here is Dr. Mark Gorman, number 21-20-C, and Dr. Saunders, again, is our investigator. Dr. Gorman is not present on the line, but indicated if we had any questions for him, that we can certainly call him, and we do not have a complainant on the call either. So, Dr. Saunders, your report, please.
Okay. So this is regarding Dr. Gorman. Patient sent a complaint in, was concerned that he received an injection to his foot that was not desired. He had secondary concerns regarding inappropriate billing. Reading the report, and I actually did have a conversation with the patient, there was a lot of concerns regarding what was going to be injected. This patient did not particularly care for or desire the homeopathic type of medicine that was going to be injected, called Tramiel. This was a big point of concern. He was concerned also that Dr. Gorman was not a real doctor and that he was a homeopathic doctor. And this was a, at least for my conversation, a back and forth to trying just to explain what physicians we are. He relates that he had some previous history of PSTD back in the military, and he had a bad knee, and that he was forced to get this injection as he was being held down while he received the injection, and because of his knee, he could not escape the room or avoid the injection. He also relates that he did not want the homeopathic type of medicine that was injected as well. Upon discussing with him, he does admit that he has some PSTD. He feels that the experience that he had with Dr. Gorman's office aggravated that. Doing a, he does admit that he has been in treatment for PSD prior to the visit. There was some confusion as to whether or not this visit caused the PSTD, but in further discussion with him, it's proven that he has PSTD beforehand, and it has just aggravated it. This was not the cause for it. Doing a medical review, the patient was seen only once. It's well documented in the chart, physical exam, treatment plan. It's well documented that the patient had PSTD from his knee injuries. The patient was on, looking at the chart review, Lyrica, Flexeril for that, and some Naprosyn. There was a diagnosis for bilateral peroneal tendinitis, for which Dr. Gorman was going to inject Tramiel. Only the right was injected as to this encounter that was done. There was not a formal consent plan in the record. Dr. Gorman notes that the consultation was with the patients on the treatment protocol prior. Dr. Gorman also responded the same way to an official complaint that was made to UHC, which was prior to the board getting the investigation. Sorry, I failed to mention that. It's noted also, and the patient does concur, that Dr. Gorman had staff member in during the entire treatment cycle. A discussion with the staffer was also made, and she does not recall any adverse event that occurred during the exam, does not recall an encounter, no arguments, nothing was, according to her, forcefully done. Dr. Gorman does feel like informed consent was obtained. He would admit that he would never hold somebody down to give the injection against their desire. Looking at the financials, only one injection was billed, so that's not so much of a concern. When I come down to the conclusion here, it's one person's word against another. I find it hard, if any of you have actually met Dr. Gorman, I find it hard to feel that even with someone with a disability, Dr. Gorman would be very forceful on this matter and holding someone down. With another staffer in the room that denies that this happens, I find it difficult to believe that the patient was held against his will. There was some back and forth, I think, that occurred regarding the actual injection of the medication. I would say that a verbal consent is normally appropriate in our field and other specialties. Written consent's not necessary, I think, for injections, as you know, hundreds of cortisone shots are probably done every day. And it becomes, I guess, a difficulty in saying, was this indeed accepted or not by the patient.
and how much of this is after the fact and a bad experience. So that's all I got. Thanks. I think the appropriate care was done. It's just whether or not it was accepted.
And again, like you said, no, you know, it's the he said, she said, and obviously it's having difficult. a staff present that can't that corroborates what Dr. Gorman indicated. So, and I think the only thing I think is, you know, people or physicians out there just need to be maybe a little bit more, you know, aware of patients with PTSD, and you know, they can be kind of fractious. So, I don't think Dr. Gorman did anything that was inappropriate. So, but just as a heads up to remember that there are folks out there that are quite sensitive to things. So, just to beware. So, I don't have any questions, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilano. Do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders on this case?
No.
Well, no questions.
Thank you. Okay. Well, hearing none, I will make a motion to dismiss case 21-20-C, saying that there are no violations of state statutes.
Second it.
Thank you.
Second the motion.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thanks again, Dr. Saunders.
All right, guys. Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go back now to our minutes from the last meeting. That is from the meeting of November 10, 2021. We just had the general session minutes. Does anyone have any concerns on those minutes or anything that they feel needs to be added? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept our general session minutes as written from November 10, 2021. Do I have a second?
Second it.
Second the motion.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All right. Our next agenda item is on issuance of license, which is B, subheading B. Our first is Dr. Kristen Murphy, or Murray, I'm sorry. Looks like everything is in place. She has applied through license through Comedy. All her everything is complete on her application. Does anyone have any questions or concerns? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the initial licensure application via Comedy, and this also includes her initial registration to dispense drugs and devices. Motion to accept both of those and dispense and or issue the licenses upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Our next applicant is Dr. Daniel Wright. His application is complete. Does anyone have any concerns or questions on the application? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the complete application for initial licensure and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Okay, next is C, the application for registration to dispense drugs and devices, Dr. Amelia Harris. And doctor's application is complete.
Does anyone have any concerns or questions on that application? Hearing none, then I will make a motion to accept Dr. Harris's initial application for dispensing drugs and devices.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right. Okay. Our next, if Dr. Roeder, are you present on the phone? All righty. We will move on then to item 7, which is a review, discussion, and a possible action relating to documentation received pertaining to Dr. Seth Felice, DPM. So, Heather, do you want to give a summary on that, or should I?
Madam Chair, board members, this is Heather. I can provide a brief summary. The board office received documentation regarding an injunction for harassment and a couple of other. There was a, I believe, a disorderly conduct and maybe one other. I think it was just disorderly conduct, actually, and. The injunction against harassment was recent. It was in 2019. The other disorderly conduct was back in 2002. So after I consulted with the board's Assistant Attorney General, Seamus Monahan, it was decided that we would just give this information to the board to determine whether the board wanted to take no action or to open a complaint. And I can answer any questions if the board has any questions. And Dr. Campbell, you may have something to add to that summary.
Right. The actually on those appears that this individual is trying to defame the doctor anyway, and then that that previous one was before the in Florida when it wasn't even, you know, anywhere near school time or grad, you know, going to a podiatry school. And actually, the this is really, it's out of the purview of our board, this issue. So I don't think there's really, there's really no need to open any kind of complaint against the physician, particularly because it's not in the purview of this board. There's no criminal proceeding, just an injunction. So if nobody has any other further questions for Heather or myself or our AG who's present here with us today, then since we don't, do we need to make a motion to not open a complaint? We just that we've made the statement that there's not, it's out of our purview, so we don't need a motion, correct?
Yeah, if the board, apologies, Madam Chair, members of the board, this is Justin Larson with the AG's office. If the board is all in agreement that no action is necessary.
Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ulano, do you have any concerns?
No.
I have no concerns.
Okay. So then appears the opinion of the board is that this has been noted and no further action will be taken at this time. All right. Do I have Dr. Roeder present yet? Okay. Dr. Discount, are you there? Dr. Andrews?
Yes. Yes, let me grab him right now. One moment.
Okay.
Take the speakerphone off, please. Hi, Dr. Discount and Dr. Andrews.
Hi. How are you guys doing this? How are you gentlemen this morning?
Great. Sorry, we didn't hear the first part. We were in clinic, but...
Okay. Well, we're going to... We have on obviously, as you know, on our agenda here, this is under number
8, review discussion possible action regarding the mock questions that were presented for the podiatric medical assistant radiology certification. And appreciate the fact that you queried the state association membership and on these. And my main question to you gentlemen is, do you think this sample of questions that was reviewed is a good indication of what a podiatric medical assistant needs to know to be able to perform their duties as a to do radiology technology work in the private office?
Yes, I believe so. Obviously, this was a short mock exam, but I think it...
We reviewed the questions and compared it to our clinical protocols, and it seemed to mirror them very well and what the candidate would need to have, you know, further instruction and practical knowledge from the practitioner.
Good. That's excellent. That would be... Okay, so, well... They're really, at this point in time, unless you have any other comments or anything, we're in that process that's going to take a little bit of time here. Heather has already, sent to the governor's office a draft, for the rulemaking and exemption requests and everything. So we have not obviously heard anything, and as I'm sure Heather has reminded us, that can... that's going to take a little bit of time. So I just think it's good that we touched base on this. I'm glad that we're at this point that seems like everybody, the state association members are in agreement as to the validity and, acceptability of these types of questions. To have good trained podiatric medical assistants is important. So, this way we just keep our lines of communication open, and I would suggest if there's anything you all come across or anything we hear, that those things are communicated to each other so that we can, stay on course with this item.
Great. Thanks. Appreciate it, and I appreciate your help in moving this process along.
And thank you, Madam Chairman. If there's anything else we can do from the Radiology Committee or from the Association, whether it be any resources we have, we'd be glad to help. Whether Mr. Abadi could be of any help, he's under advisement with us. So please let us know, and thank you for moving this forward. It's appreciated for our community.
Certainly. Thank you. Thanks very much for your time in attendance today at the meeting. Oh, wait.
Thank you.
Before you gentlemen go, Heather, do you have any other remarks you'd like to make?
Madam Chair, board members, I just wonder if there was any response from the email that Dr. Andrews sent out to the podiatric community.
Yes, we had about nearly half people responded, and there was unanimous yes.
Okay, perfect.
So not a single no came back from that survey that we ran, which was encouraging. So that's great.
That was all I had, Dr. Campbell. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you very much. The process continues, so thank you again. All right.
Thank you. Happy holidays to everybody.
I apologize again. Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilano, did you have any questions for Dr. Discount or Dr. Andrews?
No, I just want to make clear that the questions they listed actually are, in my opinion, are adequate for a medical assistant doing x-rays.
Thanks, guys, for putting this together. A lot of hard work. I feel your questions are fair and encompasses a general knowledge for this. Thank you again. Happy holidays to both of you.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. All right. Okay. So is Dr. Roeder present yet on the line? All righty. So since he's not responding, I will move on to... Heather's Executive Director Report, number 9.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. At its July 14, 2021 board meeting, the board issued a non-disciplinary order for continuing education for complaint number 2106C. And on November 10, 2021, and in consultation with the board chair, it was determined that Dr. Shi has met the requirements of the non-disciplinary order. So that case has been closed. Additionally, the at its June meeting, the board issued a non-disciplinary order for continuing education, and on November 30th, 2021, and again in consultation with the board chair, it was determined that the requirements of that order had been met, so that case was also closed. Regarding the rules, I did send the exemption request from the rulemaking moratorium to the governor's office on November 12th, 2021. I have not received a response. I do plan to follow up at least once monthly, so I will keep the board apprised on that matter. And for complaint number 2103C, Seth Clark, the board did forward that complaint to an informal hearing at a September 8th meeting, and subsequent to the meeting, board staff was notified through Dr. Clark's attorney, Mr. Bruce Crawford, that Dr. Clark is requesting to move that complaint directly to a formal hearing. The board's Assistant Attorney General, Seamus Monahan, did reach out to Mr. Crawford to negotiate a settlement in lieu of a formal hearing. So we are in the process of getting that set. We're hoping to be able to meet with Mr. Crawford and Dr. Clark at the beginning of January due to the holidays and, you know, people being out of town. That was the soonest we could get a time set. So it hasn't been set completely, but we're hoping the beginning of January. And I also submitted the current budget, and I can answer any questions on that. And the complaint log, I can answer any questions on that. There have been no new complaints added since I sent out board materials. And that completes my summary, unless I can answer any questions.
Thanks, Heather. So anybody, any other questions? Does anyone, we'll move on then to 10. Any summary of current events? Anybody have anything there that they'd like that needs to be discussed? Heather, was Dr. Rohr, he was going to call in at what time did you say?
Dr. Campbell, he told me he would be calling in at about 9:30. I would suggest that maybe we move, we could do calls to the public, and then there may be an issue with our board meeting date on January 12th,
right,
so maybe we
can,
could discuss that.
Right.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan. So we will move to 11, which is called to the public, and we have no public remaining here to call. The next item would be 12, discussion of possible action items for future meeting agendas. Does anyone have anything that they would like to see placed on any of the next meeting agenda? Or, of course, if you come think of something later, always please address Heather, and that would be placed on a future meeting agenda. Our next number eight here, or I'm sorry, number 13. The next meeting date is scheduled for January 12, 2022. And apparently, I understand Dr. Foreman has a conflict on that date.
Yes, if we can move it to the next week.
Dr. Yolano, is that going to be a problem for you? Because I can tell the next day I have to be up at the crack of dawn to get back east for a National Board of Podiatric Medical Examiners thing. So it's, you know, if that's going to be a long meeting, that's going to, you know, but you know, I think Heather also said she's made arrangements for other boardroom meetings on other days. Heather, what those were, like a Tuesday? What days were those?
Yes, Madam Chair, board members, I booked boardroom B for Tuesday, January 18th, and on Wednesday, January 19th, I booked boardroom C. Boardroom C was not available on Tuesday, the 18th.
So
those are the two options that we have. The 17th, January 17th is a holiday, so the board office would be closed. So I don't know if Dr. Ulano is available on either of those days, the 18th or the 19th.
I'll need to check my schedule, but as for now, I don't see any problems with that. But I'll have to get back to you to be sure.
Because obviously we have a quorum issue, that Dr. Foreman isn't able to call in, so you know we have to do something here to maintain our quorum. So then, Dr. Ulano, as soon as possible for you to get back to Heather so that we can solidify the date for the meeting. Hello?
Heather, I'll get back to you later on today. Hello?
Okay, yes, thank you, Dr. Ulano. That would be perfect. And just to let the board know, as of right now, it's a pretty light agenda for the January meeting, but that could change.
All right, so then we'll just kind of, once Dr. Ulano gives us his availability, and somebody, it sounds like a lot of real heavy breathing there or something. We're getting a lot of background noise. It's been hard to hear. There, thanks. So we'll wait for Dr. Ulano then to check his schedule. And I'm fine on, I mean, either day works for me. So nothing on that. Okay.
And Madam Chair, if I could just ask too, if Dr. Foreman would be available on that Tuesday.
Yes, I'll make time.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So we've completed that. We're about 6 minutes away from 9:30 for Dr. Roeder to call in. I mean, even though he's not here just yet, we could open our discussion on that because then we would just have, you know, we have questions for him. So we can go back to that topic, which is number 6. And I'd ask, how often, Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ulano, are you ordering HBO treatments?
I haven't ordered it in over 10 years.
I haven't ordered it over 10 years also. Okay. I don't do much of this. I usually refer it out to the wound care. They want to do the hyperbaric oxygen.
Right. Yeah. So you obviously have, you know, read the materials that were sent, you know, the article from APMA, but National Board of Podiatric, or the American Board of Podiatric Medicine and all that. And as we all know that they're a good adjunct to treatment, et cetera, et cetera. And the way our statute reads it, you know, it is a medical treatment. We can order it. And yes, the doctor notes that, you know, Medicare pays for it. But the material that he'd sent, when I looked at that course, it says you got to be an MD or a DO. And he's saying, well, the hospital where he works wants him to take over for the family doctor that has, you know, was doing the, you know, the supervision of patients in the, you know, HBO chamber. And he wants us to change our substantive policy statement regarding that. And, you know, there's this course, they, you know, oh, if we take this course and everything, then we can be, you know, have the ability to supervise these cases, but, you know, we're the ones who license people in this state. The hospital does not license people. The hospital gives privileges for procedures, obviously, that a doctor has to show that they are, you know, that they have proper treatment. And that letter, that article from the, you know, Podiatric Medicine Board indicated, you know, some of the procedure, or some of the hospitals are, you know, you have to have 10 proctored cases, pass the exam, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there's that still that question of, is this really outside the scope of practice? Because, again, like I said, that program that they were discussing said you had to be an MD or a DO. So I don't know if this, if the hospital is overstepping their bounds, and apparently they're the malpractice, you know, they take care of his malpractice. But I would be curious from you to, you know, if you guys, you know, if anybody on, you know, your malpractice carrier, if they've said anything to you, or, you know, I would think there might be even pushback from surgical committees, particularly maybe, you know, orthopedic surgeons, or in, you know, internal medicine, or even, you know, an infectious disease specialist. So you know, your comments and experience is, you know, what do you guys think?
In my opinion, there should be, as long as they accept the podiatrist for the class and they get passed, they get certified via the class, there should be no reason why a podiatrist can't manage it. But if they're not accepting anybody but licensed MDs or DOs, that's a big limiting factor of not letting a podiatrist do it.
Yeah, obviously. So one of the things, too, I was going to suggest that we do, just to gain more information about, you know, what our other state podiatry boards do, is we can have, I can ask Heather to contact Russ Stoner, the executive director of the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards, to do what's called a call-out to member boards. And we've done this in the past and other boards, too. It's a way to, you know, Russ sends out an email to all the member boards, of which there are now, actually we have 52 because we've added the Virgin Islands and Medical Board of in British Columbia. So to get information from them as to, are podiatrists allowed to order, can they supervise, you know, the whole myriad of questions that we, just to gain some further insight on this and helping us to have knowledge and stuff to make a good decision here. So, hopefully, he'll be calling in here soon. So, you know. So if you have any, you know, if there's anything else you think is pertinent, you know, if there are, you know, have you ever attended a hyperbaric treatment? I mean, just to see it in a wound clinic, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilano?
I used the portable ones in my office back in the mid-2000s,
mm-hmm.
And I did have some really good results with it, but the insurance company stopped approving them.
Ah, okay, yeah. So that was my, you know, another question I was going to ask Dr. Roeder is, you know, of course, I mean, all the research or all the articles I ever read, you know, is like, yes, the lower extremity ones can be efficient, but obviously not as efficient as the full body. But then with the, you know, there would be no question if it was just the lower extremity unit, because that would be, you know, there wouldn't be, it's not like you're supervising for some kind of adverse event medically. So,
I have taking care of the hyperbaric oxygen. It's going to be in a hospital setting.
Mm-hmm.
So will the supervising BPM, if we do that supervise, we'll have some adjunct stuff, staff, just in case an emergency arises, or will he be just the, or she will be the only person in that area?
Well, I believe what he had indicated was that he would be, you know, he would be supervising, but that there would be, you know, a team there in case there was a, you know, the crash cart and whatever else would need to be there just in case. So, you know, again, that he's not, obviously he's not present here yet. I don't, you know, if he doesn't call in here shortly, it would be, I would just say we would move this to a future meeting. So, hello?
Hello, this is Brett Roeder.
Oh, we were just wondering where you were. We were having just a, this is Dr. Campbell, board chair. I was just giving Dr. Ulano and Dr. Foreman, the other board members, we've just been discussing experiences mm-hmm. with use of hyperbaric oxygen, and we were, you know, discussing your situation and what you are asking. So I'm going to actually
I appreciate the board taking the time to consider it, and I apologize for being a few minutes late, and I appreciate letting me join over phone.
Thank you. So why don't you please just kind of give us a summary of what you have been asked to do by the staff at your wound clinic, or just give us a summary of the events to date.
Well, I'm in the Banner Baylor Wound Care Clinic. I've been in the Banner Wound Care Clinics for 20 years, first at what used to be Good Sam and now it's Banner University. And I was at Gateway for a short period of time while they had the wound care clinic. I've been at Baywood for approximately 13 years. So I've been in the wound care clinics for 20-some years. And we have hyperbaric oxygen as one of the therapies. And it requires a supervising physician to be in the building when the dives are being performed. And right now we only have one physician, and that makes it difficult to continue with the daily therapies at times. So I've been asked to also go off and do the class, do the 40-hour training, and be available as a supervising physician as well. The previous physician who left was a family practice physician, and I know I read the previous board statement back in December 2012, and the concerns were about emergent procedures if there were complications. And this is a hospital facility with a call team, rapid response team available at all times. The family practice doctor didn't have privileges to perform any sort of invasive procedures. So it really wouldn't be any different situation than is presently for them. So I was being considered to be sent out to do the class, and then I just thought I would check with the board, and I saw the statement concerning the concerns with podiatrists managing hyperbaric oxygen, and thus I contacted Heather, and she put me on the agenda for today.
Right. So, you know, I'll make, you know, this board licenses podiatrist. Your hospital staff mm-hmm. is the one who's going to offer you to credential you for privileges. But, you know, our job, you know, is to make sure that this is something that is within the scope of our practices. And I know when I made a response to that, Heather responded to you via what I had indicated to her. You know, the hyperbaric is a medical treatment. Obviously, it fits in our definition of podiatrist. But the fact is, of course, of the adverse events and the issues of liability to the podiatrist. And the coursework that you had sent, I looked up, and it's telling that you have to be an MD or a DO to take that course.
Oh, no, there are classes. There would be classes I can take. I can take the full 40-hour class. What I can't be at the present time is board certified in undersea and hyperbaric medicine. Did you have a chance to read the position paper by APMA in the JAPMA journal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So it stated these same sort of concerns.
Right. And the fact that, you know, that having proctored dives, et cetera, et cetera. So, And I, your, is this is just for the full, do you guys, does your clinic ever use the lower extremity units?
The individual hyperbaric units to just go on the limb? No, never do. The studies are definitely that full encompass dives are a much better modality in this.
Right, yeah.
So that's why we use that.
Exactly. Okay, I was just curious if that had been anything that you had used prior, because definitely,
no.
Yes, that's... That,
we've since I've been in the Banner Wound Care Clinics, we've always had hyperbaric available to us. So we've used that at times.
Mm-hmm.
So my statement would be that the hospital has already shown a willingness to credential me, so that's not a problem. Medicare reimburses it for it, so Medicare does not have a problem with podiatrists doing it. Other states have podiatrists that supervise hyperbaric oxygen. I would be trained with the class to do that. I have an at-call, you know, we have a rapid response team. This really wouldn't be any different than if there were a complication in the operating room or even in the wound care clinic. And unfortunately, I've been working with sick diabetic patients for 20 years, and we've had to call rapid response teams before, including just this weekend on an inpatient that I was helping. I did their band change, was helping them back into the bed, and they became orthostatic, and we had to call in the rapid team. So these are all situations that have come up. I would not be directly managing any emergent situation, because that's why we have teams and systems available in the hospital to do so.
Well, I would be interested in, the board still needs to do its due diligence and research here and talking mm-hmm. to other state boards to see how they, you know, dealt with the issue and what their protocol is, so that, further discussion will need to occur here at the board once we get that information. But I would be curious if the hospital would offer any kind of direct delineation of responsibilities of a podiatric doctor supervising, podiatric, you know, physician and surgeon supervising the hyperbaric dive, and their backups are as far as cover, you know, adverse events, and what their, you know, liability, what your liability is, and how they would back you up.
Well, from a liability standpoint, they're also my malpractice carrier because I'm an employee of Banner. So from a liability standpoint, that's not an issue. And again, what I would state is that the family practice doctor, the internal medicine doctor that presently does it, neither of them have privileges to do any sort of intervention, any emergent intervention. So it wouldn't be a separate situation.
Were they currently board certified in hyperbaric medicine?
Neither are.
Oh, okay. So they're going against what they're saying. Okay. I mean, that's a little bit on the gray areas here, I think. So just, yeah. So that's why, again, like I said, go ahead.
There are people who do surgery that aren't board certified.
Of course. Yeah. But everything I've read regarding hyperbarics is that to be a supervisor that you're supposed to be board certified. So, you know, that's sort of what I've come across. So, again, like I said, you know, this is kind of an initial talking stage about this, knowing what, mm-hmm. What you're requesting, what your hospital is saying. But I would like, personally, I would like to see some kind of delineation of what, you know, asking of you and what their responsibilities are to you and your responsibilities to them.
Yeah. And then from a board certification standpoint, I mean, previously podiatrists weren't board certified in rear foot surgery. My guess is at some point that will change mm-hmm. and that there will be board certification available in hyperbaric oxygen for podiatrists. I mean, when I came on at Banner, there wasn't H&P privileges, but I was the first person to get H&P privileges and admitting privileges as a podiatrist.
That's
at
right.
Banner. And so now other podiatrists have that.
Yep. It's all part of progress, but, you know, we have to do the steps to get there. So.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to find it now. I have one further statement on that, on your substantive policy statement. The top line says something. I'm trying to find that statement. I can't have it right now because I'm kind of in between clinic. Again, I appreciate you guys taking the time. The top line, top paragraph, you do not have that in front of you by any chance, do you?
No, I don't have mine sitting. It wasn't in my board packet.
It just says about the board makes no statements on penalties or something along those lines. So if the board makes no statements on penalties, is there actually any conflict with the board if I did it?
Let me ask, we'll ask a remark here from the AG on that.
And Madam Chair, board members, this is Heather Broaddus. I have a substantive policy statement up, and I can
that'd be great.
Read
oh,
that
perfect.
First paragraph.
Thank you.
That'd
Thanks.
Be great.
It says this substantive policy statement is advisory only. A substantive policy statement does not include internal procedural documents that only affect the internal procedures of the agency and does not impose additional requirements or penalties on regulated parties or include confidential information or rules make in accordance with the Arizona Administrative Procedure Act.
Yes, and Madam Chair, members of the board, this is Justin. Sort of piggyback on that language that Heather just read, it's essentially just, you know, stating what a substantive policy statement stands for, which is that it's purely advisory. It doesn't impose any obligations on anybody. My understanding is that most, not all, substantive policy statements will have that same language in them. Again, they don't have force of law. They're not rules. They're not statutes.
Right.
That's really all that's meant to say.
So I guess I would circle back to my question. Obviously, I want to be in compliance with the board. That I was the one who brought this to you. But if my hospital credentials me for this, and my malpractice covers me for this, and Medicare accepts the billing for this, am I truly out of compliance if this is advisory only?
That's Madam Chair, members of the board, I mean, that's ultimately a policy determination for the board. I mean, you know, the board decides what's within the scope and, whether this falls under, you know, something that
And Dr. Roeder, I appreciate those critical points that you've just mentioned, and that is why this discussion is taking place, so that we can make proper analysis and be able to make a decision on how to proceed with this issue that's being addressed today. So we will, do our best to try to, to continue getting other information so that can be distributed and discussed at the board so that we can make the most appropriate decision and instruction to our licensees on this issue.
What further information are you looking for from me?
As I had mentioned, I think it would be a good idea to get a statement, a letter from the hospital, from Banner, the wound clinic, whoever it is, indicating what has been asked of you, what their responsibilities to you are, what your responsibilities to them would be. And that, this is something that has been you know, that the that's been okayed through, if it's through hospital staff, you know, the medical, you know, the medical director of the staff, or has it, it's been okayed through, you know, all the different committees, surgery committee, whoever the committees are that have to make an okay on it, that that they're all on board with this.
Okay. Well, I don't have all of that official yet, so.
Well, like I said, this will take a little
been,
time.
It's all been, yeah, it's all been verbally just sort of run through different people and said, yeah, I don't see why this is a problem. This isn't a problem. But it hasn't gone to all of those committees officially.
Yeah, but we need to see how something in writing.
I will see about,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I will see about working on that. And I'm not trying to do this cavalierly.
No,
I think
of course
that's
not.
Obviously
I'm
recognized
not,
as well. That's why I brought it to you. I've not been in front of the board for issues before, and I've been working with sick patients for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I would our physicians here, and I would do the same sort of protocols. It takes clearances to get into the hyperbaric chamber, meaning they often have to see the cardiologist, they may have to see an ENT. So there are clearances, outside clearances when appropriate for that. So we're not trying to rush patients into this. This isn't, certainly is not a billing or money-making situation, but it's something that is integral to the wound care clinic.
Of course.
And I've been integral to the wound care clinic for, you know, 20 years. So if I can provide that in the appropriate setting, it just makes logical sense because I'm the one who's here as much as anybody.
And if you could include that protocol you just described, that's great, you know, talking about all the, you know, what all the pre-consultation work that is done before a patient goes. That would be, you know, just, you know, so people can, you know, see the delineation of how the procedure works, so people are aware the standard of care in your clinic, in that wound clinic, is.
Okay, I will see about putting something together from the hospital.
Okay, that sounds great. And I mean, during this too, Dr. Roeder, if you have, you know, questions always, or something comes up, just please contact Heather at the board office.
But she's been helpful.
Yes. No
responded.
Worries there.
All right. And then so the board meets how frequently?
The second Wednesday of each month. Now, our meeting's going to not be on that day in January. We're trying to, we've had some conflict, and so we are going to reschedule. But typically, yes, it's always the second Wednesday of the month at 8:30 a.m.
Okay, so I will put that together, and then I would be interested back from you a formal statement to that other statement where it states it's advisory only, and you'd said you need to speak with who, the AG? Did you mean like the Attorney General?
Well, and that's what Heather had just read, that substantive policy statement.
Yeah.
And our AG here, Justin, did indicate that no penalty really means that it's an advisory statement, and there's nothing in statute. So that's if.
So I will put together from the hospital. So I would like an official statement back then. If we were to proceed as it stands, would I be out of line with our present licensing?
Yeah, if you would be
being
yeah.
that it's just advisory only, as it stands without penalty. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there's liability risks and so on, just as there is with any surgery and any procedure. I understand that, but akin to, I would be out of scope of practice to be doing a carpal tunnel release.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, what I'm requesting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I understand. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We can.
All right.
And we will be just, you know, the AG that is present today is not our normal AG, so this will need to, you know, be discussed with our
Okay. That's who was just speaking.
Yeah. Right. So
that was just who was speaking a minute ago?
Justin Larson is our substitute for today. He's not typically on our board, yes. So Seamus Monahan is our other.
Okay. I appreciate your comment on that, Mr. Larson.
Thanks. And yeah, Madam Chair, members of the board, rest assured I will be, discussing all of this with Seamus and making sure that he's filled in on the status of the matter.
Alrighty. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have anything further you'd like to ask at this point or comments?
I would just like to see what other states are doing in their language for allowing this.
Right. And that's why I said I will go ahead and ask Heather to contact Russ Stoner at the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards to do the call out to member boards to get information on how what their scopes allow or et cetera. So, all right. Well,
any further questions for me?
I do not have any at this time.
Okay.
Gentlemen, do you? Dr. Foreman,
no.
Dr. Leonard,
no.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Thanks, Dr. Roder.
Yeah, thank you for his time. All right.
Thank you.
You have a good day.
Thanks. You do the same.
Me too. Bye-bye.
All right. So does anyone have anything else? All our agenda items have been discussed. Is there anything else? Dr. Yolanda will inform Heather on availability for that change in meeting date in January. Hearing no other business or at this time at 9:52 a.m., I will move to adjourn this board meeting. Do I have a second?
Second it. Second it.
All in favor, or any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Okay.